2008, Seminars, Lecture 16. The topics of this lecture are Self-Training in the Art of Wildest Dream Imagination. Illusion is an early step for me in the mental utilization of my personal stem cells. I am a magician when I think illuminating thoughts, when I encourage my mind to leap the greatest depths for the fulfillment of an idea. Newspapers are full of magic and how this magic changes the lives of people. But most of the time I look only at the obvious. I listen to the techniques children use to influence me to visualize and claim the magic of the invisible they so easily enjoy. It's so easy for us to say that it takes time for things to change, it takes time for things to happen in our life. But in this article from Discovery Magazine, it tells something very special, something that we had never known before, but we knew it, but we didn't use it. And here's the item. It says, data, mighty electric fields found inside of the cells. Mighty electric fields are found inside of the cells. We've always been speaking about the atomic bomb in one little atom of our fingertip, you know? Okay. The smallest voltmeter in the world has produced a shocking revelation. Lurking deep inside an ordinary cell are electric fields strong enough to cause a bolt of lightning. I'll read that sentence again. Lurking deep inside an ordinary cell are electric fields strong enough to cause a bolt of lightning. And you know what a bolt of lightning is?
Yeah.
A bolt of lightning is a tremendous amount of electrical current. Wow. I mean, it could do most anything. It could blow up buildings. It could be fantastic. And has. Amazing. Okay. While it has long been gospel that cell membranes contain strong electrical fields, researchers have generally assumed that 99.9% of a cell's volume was electrically dormant. So 99% of our volume of electrical current, they feel, has been dormant, not usable. It was not active. But when the University of Michigan biophysicist, chemist Raoul Kopelman, and his Michigan's biophysical chemical Raoul Kopelman, the tiny voltmeter that the inventor had, he flooded the rat's brain cells with the devices. Can you imagine flooding a rat's brain cells with tiny voltmeters? They must really be tiny. He detected fields that as strong as 15 million volts per meter throughout the rat's brain. 15 million volts per meter throughout the brain. This is the first time the voltmeter has been used in a study, and its potential is as exciting as Kopelman's find. It is roughly one thousandth of the size of any other voltmeter. Thousands can fit in a single cell and still take up only a tiny one millionth of the cell's volume. We were talking about cell volume. And we're telling about the atom, you know, how it has a great big volume for just little action. The device is filled with voltage centimeter sensitive dye that gives off green to red in proportion to the surrounding electrical field. The light is then measured using a microscope, yielding a three-measure dimensional map of the electrical field. Koppelman's plans to continue using his device to probe cells for clues about what happens when disease or toxins injure them. We like to say that thoughts are things, and truly, thoughts are things. And thoughts affect our body. Thoughts affect every cell of our body. But we don't utilize these thoughts in a beneficial way. We don't put these thoughts to motion for our highest and best. I was dealing with a couple the other day, and neither he nor she were willing to give up being angry at each other, and they wanted to be together. They wanted to have a relationship continue, but they wanted to be angry with each other. They wanted to be angry. Well, what was happening while they were being angry with each other? They're building up this electrical current within themselves, which is what? What is the current? What is another name for this current? Magnetic current. And what happens when you have opposing points of a magnet together? They spit each other out. Well, this is what happens when people are angry with themselves or angry with somebody else. Anger is putting you with your worst pole forward, your negative pole, so that you repel anything that you want, anything that you want. You repel happiness, you repel money, you repel jobs, you repel relationships, you repel everything. And this is what they do. See, in the mouse, in these tiny animators that they have there to detect the voltage of electricity in the mouse, they found such power there, such absolute power. And if the mouse has it, you can be sure we do too. And I'm sure they'll start studying the cells of humans with this same type of device. And they'll come up with information of how utterly fantastic the human body is, the human mind is, the human cells are. And the next step, how do you control the energy within the cell for your benefit? Now, we know that thoughts do a lot in that. Thoughts control the body tremendously and tell the body exactly what it wants to know. Now, we have a friend here. His name is Michael Almonds. And Michael likes to go around being intellectual and being aware of intellectual things. But Michael didn't hear this article. Michael doesn't realize what he missed by coming late. What he missed by coming just 9 minutes late. 9 minutes late. And you miss this tremendous article telling about what's going on in the cell in an electrical current way. Now, I'm pointing him out, not because he's a bad boy or something, but I'm pointing it out how often we come in late and we don't hear the whole story and we miss the essence of what could be the most important thing in our life. What could be the most important thing in our life? To be, and when you're attending a function, be there. Because when new people come in here, oftentimes I repeat some things that give a little bit of background. And then I think, no, I won't give that background. If I give that background, that encourages them to come in late and lets them think that they're special people coming in late and that the people who are here early, I just have to listen to it over again. This is something so vitally important. It's going to make the difference in your life, in my life, in all lives, because it is a power that we have registered here. Now, who's going to tell me, what did one little voltage do? What could it do? It had the power of what? Of lightning. A bolt of lightning. And what does a bolt of lightning have? A bolt of lightning is one of the most powerful chunks of energy that you could ever get a hold of. If we could capture a bolt of lightning, we would have enough to power our cities for months. One bolt. Maybe even more than months. But that is multiplied an infinite number of times in the cell. How did they say that here? They said that in every cell, there were so many of these. Yeah. Lurking deep inside the ordinary cells are electrical fields strong enough to cause a bolt of lightning. So perhaps it is more than one field, but it's within a cell. Electrical fields within a cell. And these electrical fields are, researchers have generally assumed 99.9% of the cell's volume was electrically dormant. But when this professor checked it out, he found that he detected fields as strong as 15 million volts per meter throughout the entire cell. 15 million volts per meter throughout the cell. That's a lot. That's a lot of power. We cannot conceive what that power is. It's so great. Now, what does a bolt of lightning do? They don't say what the number is, but a bolt of lightning is so fantastic. And the power is so fantastic. Now, how do you use it? How do you use it? Do you have little voltage meters that you can put, how many did they say, in a cell? One cell, they could put a whole bunch of voltage meters in there. Here, it's roughly one-thousandth of the size of any other voltmeter. Thousands of voltmeters can fit in a single cell. Thousands of voltmeters could fit in a single cell to register this power. Imagine. Now, that is utterly fantastic. We want to have this knowledge, this power, available to us. And how do we have this power available to us? We have this power available to us by knowing which routine we can use to control it. Now, we are not part of the atomic bomb research scientists. The atomic research scientists use tremendous instrumentation costing millions or billions of dollars. And they can take the energy off of one atom and make a bomb out of it that is so fantastic that it'll blow up a virtual whole city like Hiroshima or Nagasaki. We had seen it in operation. And there, it was the first attempt of anything that was done. They hadn't tried it before. They didn't know what it would do. Now, what could it do if it were under control? What happened when Chernobyl went up? It wasn't the blast of the plant itself going up. What was it that was disturbing?
The radiation. The radiation from it. The energy from it.
The what?
Energy.
The energy?
You know, when the bomb explodes, what kills people is not
the radiation.
That's right.
That's what you said, right?
Radiation, yes.
Yes, excuse me. The radiation. See, that's it. Like Sam said, it's the radiation of the bomb that does the damage. Oh, the bomb does damage too. But it's nothing compared to the radiation. Sam, are you remembering how far that radiation extended in a very terrible way around the world? How far did it go? Almost everywhere. And the winds.
Because it's invisible. It's invisible and it keeps on and on and on.
Because
it's one atom, next, and so on and so forth.
It just continues. And it goes up. And it goes out. And it disturbs everyone. It brings birth defects in people. It brings all sorts of problems that are really tough. Now, this is what the radiation does. And the radiation is very, very mean. So, how do you handle that? How do we handle this sort of a thing? Do we go on making tests with atomic bombs? Well, let's hope not. Because it does not only affect the immediate area, it affects the grander area that the upper air currents carry around the world and out into our atmosphere. I don't know. When did the first atomic bomb, when was it exploded? Back in the 40s, wasn't it? 45? Well, I mean, they did some research before that, and they had some small atomic explosions in the desert, didn't they?
Yes.
That was back in the early parts of the 40s.
I think it was after Einstein's...
30. Yeah, yeah. And in Germany, they did research, too. Now, just stop and think. Every atomic bomb or every atomic energy that is released without being controlled, where does it go? where does that radiation from that device go? It goes out into space. And I think that's about the year in the 30s, 40s when the ozone layer began to be decimated. And nobody laid it upon the bomb. Nobody laid it upon the atomic energy that was being misused. And I believe that that's quite likely what caused it. We caused our own break in the ozone layer. We caused our, and of course that's more serious than any Greenpeace thing that we could ever consider. But think about it. Now here we've got this going. What are we going to do about it? The astronauts went out into outer space, and their astronaut device, their spaceship, would not come back. NASA could not control it. The astronauts could not control it. So a radio announcer said to his audience, "Let's pray for the astronauts that they come home safely." So his radio broadcast was spread across the entire world, and other stations picked it up, and other people picked it up, and other nations picked it up. It was a nice thing to do, to think good thoughts, to bring that spaceship back and the astronauts back. Just a couple of people, but they're expendable, you know? But you see, it's a concept. It's a concept of our work in outer space. And all nations wanted to be part of it in some way. And all people did. And so they said, "We now see our astronauts return safely back to Earth. We return safely, return back to Earth, back to Earth." And what happened? They came back to Earth. Not only did they come back to Earth, they came back to Earth where they were supposed to, right on target. So they could be picked up by the ship that was there to pick them up. Right on. So we have these radiation fields going out into space, and people are doing things with the atomic bomb that we don't know about. The Chinese are doing things, and the Indians in India are doing things. And perhaps other nations that we don't know about. In German, I'm sure, have done things about it. And what's that?
It's apart from the restriction placed on them by
the United Nations. A lot of them. And we don't know this. But everyone that is breaking the atmosphere with their radiation is causing problems. Now, let's just look a step further. What do we do in our hospitals? We use special devices that use X-ray, that use radiation treatment, and we are sending this radiation treatment out into the room, out into the hospital, out into the atmosphere. It's infinitesimal, of course, compared to an atomic bomb, but nonetheless, day after day after day after day, they have technicians who work with X-ray treat stuff and radiation, and they wear a big lead belt, big lead sheet. But what about their arms? What about their head sticking out there? Yeah? A big deal, you know. So, do you think they're not affected? Oh my, yes. Oh my, yes. And we are causing this, but it's not them that's affected that we're concerned about. It's us, because they're sending it out into the universe. They're sending it out everywhere, and they're as dangerous for us as the atomic bomb. The atomic bomb, insofar as its damage, does damage in just a certain prescribed area, but its radiation goes off in an infinite spread. In fact, the radiation of Chernobyl, and that was maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, the radiation of Chernobyl in Russia, where the atomic plant blew up, is still affecting areas of the world. Its radiation is still in certain areas. It has sort of planted itself in areas where it was not disturbed. Because it went out, around, and down, and settled. And settled perhaps in the northern regions of Antarctica and the Arctic, and Norway, and Sweden, and Finland, and Russia. And they're laying there because it's not disturbed by anything. Nothing is disturbing it, or moving it, or dissipating it. All it does is lay there. Now, it doesn't get stronger. It just is. And this is something tremendously important to know about. Now, you and I do not have to be affected by this. we can be immune to all radiation. And the way that we're immune to all radiation is through our thought, through the word that we speak. Our stem cells are untouched by radiation. What is touched by radiation are our cells that are dedicated cells, cells that are dedicated to our heart, liver, lungs, and what have you. But the stem cells are undifferentiated matter. They're undifferentiated cells. They are not dedicated. They have not taken on any personality. They have not taken on any business about themselves where they have a certain aspect to their being that makes them into a cell, that is into a liver or a lung or whatever. And you see, being that that's the case, they also do not absorb radiation. Interesting. They do not absorb radiation. And this science will be telling us in the next few years. I'm telling you today. But stem cells do not absorb radiation. But stem cells are very sensitive to what? Our thought. Our thought is more powerful with a stem cell than anything else. In fact, it's the only power with a stem cell. When the doctor takes a stem cell out and puts it into a heart to regenerate the heart, he is putting his thought on that stem cell of what it's doing. And the person receiving it is expecting that stem cell to do it, because that stem cell has done it before. And so he's got two cooperating persons there, but when he uses a stem cell. Interesting. And things happen. Now, this is very true for the stem cells, very true for you, but think about what's happening. Now, they're talking about the cell of a mouse in which they put these many voltmeters. And the voltmeters were merely for a catalyst to tell what was going on in that cell. They did not become part of the cell. They did not disturb the cell. They did not upset the cell. They just recorded what was going on, much like acupressure and acupuncture do, much like biofeedback does. It just records what's going on. Now, we want to bring about a change. We want to bring about a change in our body, in our world, in our life, in our experiences. And the only way to bring about a change is what? With our thought. Now, that you know that there are stem cells makes you feel a little more comfortable. But push, that's nothing. Now, when you know that they can have how many millions, how many billions, how many thousands of these little voltmeters inside of the cell? Roughly 1/1000th of the size of any other voltmeter, and thousands can fit into the single cell. And these thousands only take up 1/1000000th of the cell's volume. 1/1000000th of the cell's volume. Thousands of little tiny voltmeters that they can handle and that they can read take up only 1/1000000th of the size of the cell. Do you see how tiny that can be? And do you see what ratio we're working on? We're working on very finite numbers, and infinitely too, but very finite numbers, and it's really something tremendously important. We have the ability to empower the power in our cell to do what we want. Now, the voltmeter merely reads the number of power that's there, okay? You put a voltage meter on your battery, and the battery says, good, 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 and that means you can use the battery, right? So the battery works. Okay, you put a voltage meter on your cells, alive, 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 power, 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 you know, more than any battery you ever had. They'll be making batteries out of cells one of these days because there's so much power in it. And they'll have batteries that'll last forever, just utilizing the power, just working the power, just organizing the power and selecting it, but keeping it within the cell. because the cell will be the battery, and that will power all of our battery needs that we could ever have. Now, this is fantastic. This is amazing. This is true. This is for you. This is for each one of us. This battery is us. Now, okay. Is that the word? What do you say? How many batteries are in a human body at this moment? Go ahead, tell me. You don't know the number. You cannot name that great, great number. But if there are, it's one millionth. These thousands of voltmeters take up one millionth of the space of a cell. Then these thousands of voltmeters times a million would tell you how many voltmeters could fit in there. And now that has nothing to do with the power and energy of the cell itself. But each of those little voltmeters has the power, not the voltmeter, but the volts they register, have the power to give out as much power as a bolt of lightning, which is fantastic. And if it can all be contained within the cell and utilized, then we can take a cell from here. In fact, if your cell runs out, you just take another cell and stick it in your battery, and away you go. Sounds ludicrous, but it's not. This is what the world really is all about. It is all about our imagination. And that's why we said here, first off, we said, self-training in the art of the wildest dream. Imagination, illusion, is the early step in the mental utilization of our stem cells. This is what we're talking about. And this little article here from the Discovery Magazine goes on to reveal more information on it. And I was just flipping through some of the articles I have upstairs, and it is amazing how many of them are telling the same type of thing. I'm telling you guys all these things that I read and that I learn and that I know, and that go beyond what I read and learn and know. And if I were to read the literature to you, you would just sit back, how fantastic. I sit back and say, how fantastic. But I tell you, and as I tell you, you are privy to what I know. You are into my secret field of understanding, and it's exciting. Now, we have the ability to speak to ourselves. We have the ability, first off, which I recommend to you, speak to your stem cell. Tell your stem cell what you want it to do. Some of you have seen the movie Secret, and in there the genie speaks out. He says, "Your wish is my command, master. You are the master. You tell me what to do," the genie says. Here, this genie is some great big hulk of a thing coming out of this bottle, you know, and it says, "You little shrimp, you know, you little guy who holds this bottle in your hand, you're my master," you know. And this is true. The stem cells, the cells and their power within our body, are like that genie, so grand and so powerful and so magnificent, it scares us. And it should. We should have respect for it and use it wisely. If you ever tell another person that you hate them, you are saying you hate yourself. What a terrible waste of energy, you know? If you ever tell another person that you don't like them, that you don't think they're nice, what a waste of energy. You are Mr. Nice Guy. You are Miss Wonderful. You don't talk like that. You go out and you create the world by your thoughts, regardless of what the world's experiencing, and you go out and you say, "You're wonderful," and you may be just really bad, but you say, I say, "You're wonderful, you're wonderful, you're wonderful," and it's not wrong. That this energy that's passing between us no longer is an energy of misunderstanding or confusion, but is an energy of love and power and being wonderful. If a husband and a wife were to say that to each other, "You're wonderful. You're wonderful." I don't know. We have this power. You know this power. Now, use it. Use it to your joy and benefit. Use it to your happiness. But again, take our first sentence here. It says, self-training in the art of wildest dream. What is your wildest dream? What's your imagination? What's the illusion you want? What's your wildest dream? Is your wildest dream to be wealthy and to be healthy and to be happy? No. Your wildest dream is to experience your original purity and integrity. If it is not, you're wasting your time. When you experience your original purity and integrity, what do you experience? Everything. You experience everything you can be. You experience your wholeness, your happiness, your goodness, your abundance, your relationships. You're Mr. and Mrs. Wonderful. You're fantastic. But you don't deserve it. You don't deserve it because you know this principle and you're not using it. You're using it to the contrary. You're feeling self. You feel sorry for yourself. You feel that other people are hurting you. You feel other people are climbing down your back. You feel that other people are taking advantage of you. What do Sam and Sybil do here? S and S. What do Sam and Sybil do? What do they do? They love this philosophy. They don't know it totally because they haven't really allowed themselves to know it, but they got a good idea about it, okay? Better idea than many people do. And so what's the thing they got out of it? One of the primary things. As you give, so shall you receive. Mm-hmm. And so they are giving to you, to their family, to the world. They don't care whether you learn anything. They would like that. But they just give you this knowledge. And if you want to ignore it, then you go right ahead and ignore it. They tell you, do your lessons, do your studies, be aware of it, and you're the one who's blessed by it. It doesn't bless them. They're already blessed. And they are very sneaky. They see you already done. They see you already cooked. They see you already complete with your awareness and your revelation of who you are. And that's terrible. They don't have any work to do. They just give and give and give and give. Now, everyone, please be nice to yourself right now. How many of you all give and give and give and give without any other expectation? How many of you do that? Yeah. You, don't you give up? My God, yes. You don't give? Yes, okay. Well, hey, keep it up there. That's good. Okay, thank you. Now, give and give and give. And what happens when you give? You make yourself available for more. If I give you a glass of water and you never drink that glass I cannot put more in there. But when you drink the water and use it, then I can get more in there. And I can get more in there. That's true. You get rid of the glass of water, you defecate it or urinate it or whatever. But you've got to use it. You've got to use it to get the blessing from it. Now, do you want the blessing from this? Do you want the blessing from your stem cells being an instrument to shine forth in your life your original purity and integrity? Do you want that?
Yes.
Sounds nice, doesn't it? Well, then you must speak that word. Now, if you are not revealing that right now, that's okay. Baby, you're 5 years old. Baby?
Yeah.
Baby Sam, what do you want to be when you grow up? What do you want to be when you grow up? He says, I want to be a doctor, a lawyer, Indian chief. I want to be a fireman. I want to be a policeman. He tells you what he wants to be. Now, what happens to him? When baby grows up and baby keeps the thought that he wants to be a scientist, not that he wants to be all these other things. That was okay. But now he says, I want to be a scientist, just like my dad. You know, I want to be a scientist. I want to be a scientist. And then he stays one-pointed on that. He'll be a scientist. But he will not only be a scientist, he will be a great scientist because he is one-pointed. He's not an accidental scientist, somebody who found it interesting and studied it and learned it and got degrees in it. He will be a real scientist because he loved it from the day one. He lived it from when he was a little child. He lived it from the beginning of his experience. Now, you can't tell a child, what do you want to be when you grow up? A nurse. You want to be a nurse. You know? You want to be a mother. You want to be this. Don't say that. Because the minute you say that, you limit them and yourself. So, he wanted to be a scientist from the time he was 5 years old. And today, he's one of the greatest scientists in the world. You know what his name is? Sam Edison. You're not laughing. Mr. Edison is one of the greatest scientists in the world. You've got to admit that. You know, when I talk to you and you don't respond to my little idioms like, I think maybe you don't know about Thomas Edison. Maybe you don't know about Einstein. Maybe you don't know. Oh, perhaps Einstein you'd know better than Edison. Yeah. But these are all great scientists, all great men. And you know what these great men were? All of them, including Einstein. They were all thought to be fools. Fools, absolute fools. Because the world did not understand them. The world did not realize what they were doing. The world did not understand the mathematical formulas that they were working with, the chemical formulas they were working with. And they brushed them off. Edison was told they didn't want him in school because he was so stupid. Well, he was stupid like a fox, you know. And Einstein, he just barely got through school. He was not motivated, nor was Edison motivated, nor are your children motivated. Only when they become motivated do they start using their stem cells to a better advantage. And you don't motivate a child by saying you're stupid. You don't motivate a child by telling them that they have no capacity to learn. So Edison went away from school and he studied on his own. And Einstein went away from school and studied on his own. And his father said, what will become of you? You're so stupid. Oh my goodness. If the parents could have lived long enough to see their sons do the wonderful things they've done. You know. But it doesn't matter. The sons are not doing this for their parents. You are not doing this for your parents. You're not doing this for your husband or your children or your wives. You're not doing it for anyone. You're doing it only for yourself. You're being the master being that you are for yourself. Now, Sibyl is a very mean, mean lady. Sibyl wanted the spiritual revelation more than anything in the world. She saw it in the writings that she was getting. And so she would burn the midnight oil. And she would read these books. She would study them. She'd study them on into the night. She'd study them during the day and perhaps not get things done that had to be done. But she studied. She put her values in order. Do you put your values in order for what you want? Sibyl is coming out like a rose. Absolutely fantastic. One of our geniuses of this century. She will be part of the foundation, along with Sam and the rest of you. She'll be part of the foundation of the new Nigeria. You don't need a new Jerusalem. You got a new Nigeria. Yeah. You're welcome. And this is done. This is done by your thought. This is done by your dedication to who you are. Now, I told Michael, I said, Michael, what sort of stuff are you reading there in our lecture class here? And Michael was reading all sorts of fascinating things that sort of fit in his mind with what we were doing. But every moment that Michael looked at something other than hearing the discussion that were taking place, he was missing the bet. He was missing the program. He was missing what we're talking about here. He was missing the learning about how to take the stem cells and utilize them for anything you want in your life. Oh, he picked it up because he's so bright. He picks it up as it goes along, even if he's half asleep. His dad taught him that, you know. He says, son, you can sleep through my sermons, but you better be able to tell me what I said when I'm done. And that's right. So he learned to do that. He slept through his father's sermons. And when the sermon was over, his dad would say, okay, son, what'd I say? And he'd give him a reiteration of it. See, this is a brilliant mind that'll do it. But he didn't have to do that. If he had just stayed awake, he could have done 3 or 4 more other things while he was listening to his father's sermons and being a genius. Are you ready for your genius?
Yes.
Are you ready, Mr. Stanislaus?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Ah.
No. If you are ready for it, you will not have one angry thought in your heart about anybody or anything. You will not have one thought in your heart that something's not working right. You understand? You will not have one thought in your mind that some program of your life is not doing it the way you want it to do. You understand? You cannot have that. If you have that, you completely wash yourself out of the school. You completely wash yourself out of the stem cell school. And then you're back in the normal cells that age and have all sorts of problems. And if you want to be in the normal cells, that's okay. That's called humanity. If you want to be in humanity and go through those experiences, that's good. There's a lot of them, aren't there? But what you're here, because you want to take that step into your inner self and be who you are. You want to take that fantastic lightning bolt energy and encapsulate it and use it as a powerhouse within you. You want to speak to that stone and say, go and be to the mountain, open, you know, and to the sea, open, I'm coming through. But I would say, why tell the sea to open? Just walk over the top of it, you know? Or why walk over the top of it? You're here, here's where you want to be, boop, boop, you're there. That's what power you have in you. That's the power that Jesus had and knew and used. That's the power. Do you know that the Ten Commandments were kept in a container? What do they call that container? What did they call that container? If you're going to open your mouth and say something, say it again loud enough so I can hear it. What did they call it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Huh?
Fashionate.
Hmm?
Fashionate. It's not fashionate.
What did he say? What do you say?
Parchment.
No. I said they kept the container, they kept the Ten Commandments, and it was not a parchment, it was on stone. They kept the Ten Commandments in a
tablet.
In a box. The Ark. Ark of the Covenant.
Scroll.
What do you say?
Scroll.
No, we're not talking about scrolls. We're talking about the box in which these things were kept. This beautiful box, the Ark of the Covenant. And in this ark, in this box, it was always kept at the head of the Jewish sanctuary. Remember? It was kept behind the sanctuary, up in front. And do you know? Any person who would open that Ark of the Covenant without being a priest or without knowing what they're doing would instantly be fried.
Yes.
It was an electrical generating box, a battery so powerful that poof, they would be made into dust. And that's true. That's true. The Ark of the Covenant was protected by them. Now, who created the Ark of the Covenant to protect that? Which one of these early Mosaic people did that? Who did that? Not Moses, but who did that?
Jesus.
No. This is before Jesus. But this... Who did it? Well, one of the priests did it. Yes.
I am.
You did?
I am. Go.
I am.
Okay, let hush now. I am talking about this little game here right now. You're right. I am God did it, and that's for sure. But the thing is, some priest felt he had to protect the Ark. They had to protect the Ten Commandments and all these sacred writings of the Hebrews. They were on scrolls. And he had to protect them. And so they did. And he built this Ark of the Covenant. And he built it so that it would be an electronic box so that the priests could open it because they knew what they were doing. Abracadabra, you know. They knew what they were doing. But if anyone tried to disturb the contents of the Ark of the Covenant, they'd be fried. Now, how could they do that? Where did that energy come from? Where did that energy come from that did it? did each of the priests have within them their own energy, and as they looked at the Ark of the Covenant, they charged it, and that everybody who came to it, who had this attitude about it, charged the Ark of the Covenant, kept charging it? Or did it have the charge within it that was so strong, put in by the mind in the first place, that it was never running out of energy? Now, did they have electric lights back in the days of Moses? Did they have electrical power, anything? No. Did they have any batteries to run cars? Did they have cars to run? No. Did they light their houses with batteries or lights or anything? No. Why would they have this beautiful battery? And this battery is described in the Bible in complete point-to-point-to-point size and everything, and anyone who would build one like it would be able to have it just that way, and it would have that power in it. Because the power is in the concept of the Ark of the Covenant. The power is in the concept. Now, that's pretty powerful. Pretty wonderful. Now, I'm telling you this story based upon these physiological facts, and Mike wants to draw us to the idea that I am God, I'm the Creator, and I'm the one who does these things, and that's true. But right now, we're talking about that. Right now, we're talking about who brought that forth first. Now, I can conceive this, perhaps you can too, I can conceive that Michael was there at that time, and perhaps he was the designer of the Ark of the Covenant. I can conceive that. That his spiritual self was there living that. All of us were there when Jesus was around. All of us have lived many times, and the experience of Jesus is being lived right now, right in another dimension, right with us right now. All these things are happening right now, but that's just interesting talk. What we are interested in is how we can utilize the power that we are to return or experience our original purity and integrity in every area of our being and have a life that is just supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, just absolutely wonderful. Do you follow what I'm saying? So, again, we want to stay with the particular little subjects that I give you, because if we jump out of the subject into the broader picture, you miss the little points that will help you to be confident in yourself in knowing the subject. If you think that 2 times 2 is not the theory of mathematics, you will never learn mathematics. Because mathematics has a fundamental. And to learn mathematics, you have to learn the fundamental. And the fundamental of mathematics is 2 times 2 is 4. Once you learn 2 times 2 is 4, then you go on 2 fours are 8, 2 eights 16, whatever. But that's the fundamental principle. If you don't get that fundamental principle, then you will not have mathematics at your fingertips. If you don't have the fundamental principle of the stem cells and of what each cell of the body really is, what each stem cell really is, but the stem cells have another aspect to them that the normal body cells don't have. The stem cells have a purity about them. They were untouched. They're undifferentiated. They have not been given a role to play. They are like essence of purity and essence of goodness and essence of all that is. You know, they're the essence, unmarked essence. And all the other cells of the body are already marked. Marks for the heart, the liver, lungs, whatever you want to do. Now, that doesn't make them bad. All it does is make them marked. And these cells are slated to die. Those cells are slated to die because that's part of the program they have. And you're not going to change it, and you don't want to. You want to let them go. Now, the new stem cells, the stem cells that are coming in, are not in any way limited. And you keep the new stem cells away from the old cells. You keep them in a special room where they're being themselves and having fun. And in that special room, you put a heart, and that heart is perfect, original pure. You put a lung, you put a brain, you put a whole body if you wish, and it'll rejuvenate the entire body. Would that mean then the old cells too? Well, yes, it'll rejuvenate the old cells, but only to keep them alive, not to keep them in their purity. Can the cells return to their original purity and integrity? Or is the original purity and integrity beyond the cell? Is it a mental concept? It is a spiritual concept. It's something that's beyond a physical experience like the cell. The cell can be spiritualized, it can be uplifted, it can be magnificated, it can be done all those things if you wish it to. But why? You have a ditch in front of the house, and that ditch is full of foul water. And so you say to yourself, if I pour enough fresh water in there, it'll freshen up the ditch, and the ditch will have eventually fresh water. But it'll always have some of that foul water in there. So what you do, you take the opening at the end of your ditch, and then you let the water run away. And then you take fresh water and you rinse it out, scrub it out, get all the old foulness out of it. And then you dam it, and then you fill it with fresh water, and you keep it filled with fresh water. Now, you might never get all the old foulness out of that water, but at least it will be 1,000,000, 2,000,000% better than just trying to freshen up foul water. It doesn't work that way. It takes forever to do that. And you see, when you are a beautiful glass of water, and you give from your glass of water, or you drink it and use it, and then you refill it with pure water, and somebody wants to come along and give you some of their water, and you say, no thank you, I'm already overflowing. And they say, well, we're giving you some. So they pour some water on top of your glass, and it runs over the edge because your glass is full. Because you're not going to allow anything in your glass of water than what you feel is your highest and best. Does that make any sense to you? Can you visualize that picture? Well, it's simple like that, and you can discuss it. Then, well, a drop might get through, this might happen. Basically, that's the concept. If you're going to work in truth and purity, then you're going to have to become Mr. Edison. How did Mr. Edison accomplish what he wanted to accomplish? He went into a vacuum. He put the filament into a vacuum, and the filament burned for hours without burning out. He put it in a vacuum. Now, how do they show the space scientists how it feels to be in a weightless condition? They put them in a weightless condition here on Earth. Now, that condition is not controlled by what? Gravity. Their weightless condition is not controlled by gravity. They make them in an anti-gravity chamber. And in this anti-gravity chamber, they float around and they do all sorts of things that they would do in an anti-gravity chamber. But what is it that they found with the astronauts they send in outer space? The astronauts who are sent into outer space in this weightless condition, that their bones don't grow properly, that their body doesn't function properly, because their body depends on gravity to operate a lot of its activities. It's like you have a big tank of water on the top of the house, and the gravity is supposed to pull it down into the house, and if there's no gravity, the water will just sit there. There'll be no reason for the water to come down or go up or go anywhere. It just sits there. And this is what happens to the astronauts. Their body just sits there because it doesn't have the normal gravity activity to function in. And they have taken astronauts and they have trained them to live in an anti-gravity environment. And living in an anti-gravity environment, they have to change many of their habits because their functions don't work. Their urination doesn't work, their defecation doesn't work, their eating doesn't work. You have to breathe in and swallow in the food to go in, because the food just doesn't want to do anything. It just lays there. And if you don't careful, it'll float around. Ah, there's my bread! and it's true. I'm sure you've seen stories and pictures about that. And it's what they do. Now, how would we handle any one of those things? We who are stem cell enthusiasts, aficionados of stem cells, how would we handle it? We would speak our word and it would be done. Now, do you want to take your body, which exists as one element of it in gravity, and you want to take your body out of gravity? You couldn't exist. You couldn't live. Your body would soon fall all apart because there's nothing holding it together. Because your cells and your skin, your skin, it's holding it in place because gravity is pulling it downward. It's interesting, but that's what happens now. But you, using your stem cells, can speak your word and say, I am immune to all unlike my what is high, for my highest and best. You don't have to say what it is. I am immune to all unlike my highest and best. So in other words, if gravity is necessary for you to live, you will have gravity. Or you will have the next best thing to gravity, which is something that does what gravity does, but is not beheld by gravity. Can there be something like that? Does something exist that is like gravity but not gravity? Yeah, the anti-gravity machine. The anti-gravity machine itself. It does these things. But stop and think about it. You have the stem cell power within you to speak your word about for anything you choose to have it be. And what is it you'd like to have it be? What is it you'd like to have your stem cell work on? Well, be very, very careful. Because if you ask the genie for some wishes, and the genie says, sure, take them. How many do you want? I want 3 wishes. Huh? What would your first wish be if you had any stem cell intelligence about you? What would your first wish be? Come, quickly.
I am my original purity and integrity.
Your first wish would be, I have all the wishes I want.
Purity.
Then you could say, I am my original purity and integrity. But first you take care of the school. That's that game. You're playing that game of wishes. And so you say, I have all the wishes I want. Now, how many wishes did Aladdin receive from the genie when the genie popped out of the bottle? Anybody? We think 3. That's what the story is. That's what the writers write. Because if a writer writes infinite, then there's no fun in writing the story. Because there's no problems that are going to come up. And you used up your wishes. You used up your wishes in an incorrect way. But really, the genie did not make any limitation. The author of the original story was universal. Are you universal? Do you speak your word that you have within you the ability to do anything you want to do? Are you returning your body to the awareness of its original purity and integrity? Or are you your original purity or integrity? Or are you your purity and integrity? You can say original or not. It's just a little added stuff for you. But in reality, purity and integrity is purity and integrity. How can you be a little bit pregnant? You know? How can you be a little bit pure, a little bit integral? You see, we like adverbs and adjectives because they sound so glorious. Yeah. They sound like a lot of fun. And we sometimes misuse them. And we figure that that's a necessary part. Our original purity and integrity, which is right, that's what I teach it to you. Our original purity and integrity. My purity and integrity. And then, on campus, I was using this phrase, my purity and integrity, and the campus monks said to me, Dr. Byron, you don't really want to say that. They don't call me Dr. Byron, they call me Herb. They said, Herb, you don't really want to say that. And I said, what do you mean? Because anything is limited to what I think my is. But if I am purity and integrity, if I am my ideal, or if I am the ideal purity and integrity, then I've really got something. But if I am my purity and integrity, it could be any possibility. The ideal purity and integrity, or ideal purity and integrity by itself, is truly wonderful and truly powerful and truly great. And this is what they suggested. And I thought, very good, very good. They're really thinking. Purity and integrity. You like that, Michael? You think it's about time for us to take a break? You look at your watch exactly at 10 o'clock. Now, we'll keep going till 10 after because you came 10 minutes late and we have to make up for your lost time. No. but seriously, Michael, I pick on everybody who does not respect the program and does not respect themselves. And if you come in and jump in the middle, like, well, you came with your wife the other day and you brought this ravishingly beautiful creature into this room here, and then you stood before us waiting for us to recognize you were there. We knew you were there. I mean, everybody else has seen you before and seen her before. I had never seen her before. But then you had to be acknowledged, and I said, Michael, sit down, you know? Not because show had to go on, but because you wanted to put on your show in my show. And it's my show. Remember the fellow who spoke up when I was talking?
Yeah.
What did he do?
The Muslim.
Yeah. Yeah, this Muslim spoke up when I was speaking it. Hey, I'm happy that you're talking. That's quick.
We admire you, sir.
Huh?
We admire you. See,
we
are
some
guy.
You what?
You're a nice guy.
Okay, but really, it's very courteous for having one person talk at a time. And I give you all opportunities to talk. I say, what do you have to say? You have a question? You have anything you want to say? And that's the time for you to say it. But as I was telling you, this Muslim came to our talk, and he came and followed me all over, and he wanted to look at me. He's a newspaper journalist, Muslim, and as he followed me, he was very intensive. And so in one of our meetings in the hotel over here, the name of it, the hotel.
Binez Hotel.
Yeah. He stood up there, and he was standing, put his hat on, and he says, I've got something to say. And I said, what would you like to say? He said, I want to tell about my philosophy. And I said, well, you hire the hall if you want to tell about your philosophy. I hired this hall to tell about my philosophy. And you know, he was ready to cluck me. And so then he said, no, I want to tell about my philosophy. I said, do you know what your philosophy is? Do you really know what Muhammad taught? Do you really know what Muhammad taught in the Quran? Do you really know what words were said? Do you really know what he said about womanhood? He said women were the most beautiful beings on the face of the earth, to be respected and honored and uplifted in every possible way. And since then, some of your followers have put women down and made them into nothing as far as they could be. And then he said that you should honor your father and your mother. He said all the things that Jesus Christ said. They were just like brothers in saying many things. But then later generations changed these things. And I went on and relating specific points. And when I got done, he said, can I stand? And I said, sure. He took off his hat. He says, I take off my hat to you.
Yes.
Now, I mean, he was ready to, you know, put me out. But you know what he did after that? He followed us around like a little kitten with the rest of his friends so that he could be photographed with us in the newspapers and stuff like that. What? He invited us? Ah, good for him. And that's the way to do it, to invite you. And you see, so you have to be very courteous. And sometimes when you're courteous, you get an answer that blows your mind and sets you in a whole new course. Do you think that perhaps he went back to the original teachings of Muslim?
No.
Probably not. But, yes?
He will not go back to that.
He will not go back.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, you see, we all learn. We all learn. We all wake up. And you have a wake-up call right now with all these thousands and thousands and thousands of little meters that fit into the brain. And there's still room for... it's only one millionth of the space being used by those meters. Isn't that spectacular? And that man has the ability to make a meter that tiny and to make many of them and put them into a cell for checking the cell. And for reading the meter, you have to have a screen to read it, you know. You got to know what it says. Isn't that something? And if one of those people who really isn't into it can do it because that's where he puts his attention, that's why Sam became the great scientist that he is. He held on to that vision from the time as a little child. Okay, we didn't quite make your 10 minutes, but we'll quit now and come back at 5:30, right? Okay. So, thank you. I love you.